This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at numberfire.com, and this is episode 141 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the Number Fire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm very fortunate to have a platform where I can talk about what I want to talk about, and then all the while have really awesome conversations with people from all over the world. Like, it's still mind-blowing to me that I have a podcast that people actually want to listen to. I love answering questions and sharing thoughts on fantasy football topics. With this being episode 141 of this podcast, you guys know by now that my goal is not to just manage your fantasy team. I want you to enjoy the interesting details of the game because there are so many interesting details to this game of fantasy football. With all this being said, sometimes there are too many details to the game. As in, there are so many variations to things that it becomes difficult to even talk about a specific topic. Like, I can talk about drafting quarterbacks late without having to get into league specifics because we know that the vast majority of leagues are still single quarterback leagues. Or I can talk about fantasy scoring and simply say whether it's PPR or not, and you guys know what I'm talking about. One subject that I can't be so simple with is with keeper selection. There are just so many different ways that teams set keepers across leagues. Each league will have different players being kept. They'll have a different number of total keepers being selected. They'll have different costs associated with each keeper. It just makes for a really not so straightforward thing to talk about. But even still, my goal today is for you to end this podcast feeling a little bit better about your keeper selection or selections than you did when you first hit play. I'll be honest though, this isn't really a show like the Superflex one that I did last week where I'm going through an exhaustive study with lots of math and numbers. We're definitely going to be taking a logical and mathematical approach here, but this is going to be way less intense, I promise you. If last week was like watching a final season episode of Breaking Bad, today's going to be like watching an episode of The Office. I know a lot of you are looking to select your keepers because you're emailing me about it all the time. So I've broken up sort of my process when selecting a keeper into three questions that you should ask yourself before selecting yours. We'll go over each of these questions today, and then I'll get into some listener-specific examples that might help you guys as well. Okay, so question one to ask yourself when making your keeper selections. Who would you be selecting instead of that keeper? Aren't you guys glad that you're listening to the show? I bring the heat. I bring the stuff that you don't think about yourself. In all seriousness, people don't think about this when they're making their selection. And by this, I mean the same thing that I talked about on last week's Superflex show, and that's opportunity cost. Just to reiterate what I said last week, opportunity cost is the loss of potential gain from other alternatives when one alternative is chosen. When you choose one thing, what you don't choose is your opportunity cost. So when you go and keep a player, your cost to keep that player isn't just what you're spending for that player. It's your alternatives. It's who you're foregoing the chance to have by keeping that guy. This is where things can get difficult when answering keeper questions from listeners. Let's pretend Devontae Freeman can be kept for an early second round pick in your draft. You come to me and you say, "Hey JJ, should I keep Devontae Freeman for a second round pick?" Well, according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com, Freeman is leaving draft boards in the middle of the second round. Without considering anything else, it wouldn't make sense to keep a player like Devontae Freeman in the early second round when he's being drafted in the middle of the second round. But opportunity cost gets all jacked up in keeper leagues. Because if everyone in your league is keeping 1, 2, 3, 4, however many players, then the available players at certain parts of the draft are different than they would be in a regular redraft league. In other words, your alternative to Devontae Freeman isn't necessarily LeSean McCoy like it is in a redraft league. It could be Rashad Penny. Or if there are a lot of potential keepers, it could be someone even worse. Because we should assume that teams are keeping actual good players. If you're debating whether to keep this one guy, maybe like Devontae Freeman, don't look at his keeper cost and compare it to his ADP. Look at his keeper cost and compare it to the alternative options you may get at that cost based on the players who are available. The thing is though, your keeper selection isn't always going to come down to just one player and whether or not you should keep him. You usually have a few guys that you're considering and each of those players have different costs associated with them. So the second question to ask yourself when making your keeper selection is, what type of cost savings is your keeper generating? Maybe you're facing the choice to keep Chris Hogan for a 15th round selection or Todd Gurley for a first. How do you know if what Todd Gurley is providing you is going to be better or worse than Chris Hogan given these costs? This is where you've got to start doing a little adding and subtracting. In an ideal world, you could just plot historical average draft position versus actual points scored, find the number of points we'd expect a player to score at that average draft position, and then just compare that total to a player's projection. Let me explain. Let's assume that you can keep Todd Gurley for a 50th overall pick. Historically, at pick 50, running backs have scored about 160 PPR points. So Todd Gurley's fantasy football expected point total at that spot is 160. If Gurley is projected to score 300 points this season, then that difference, the 300 minus the 160, is Gurley's overall cost savings. That's the advantage in keeping Todd Gurley. It's 140 points. The issue that we run into when we do this is that the expected fantasy point values shift because of all the keeper selections your league mates are making. This goes back to what I just talked about. If good players are being kept, and if a lot of players are being kept, then that 50th overall pick isn't expected to score 160 points anymore. It may be expected to score closer to like 100. This is exactly why we shouldn't just brush off the idea of keeping players for early round draft picks. Since the player pool is going to be smaller, that means the expected output in the early rounds becomes worse. Like if David Johnson, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, Antonio Brown, and Alvin Kamara are all being kept, then Saquon Barkley may be the first overall pick in your keeper draft. His output from a projection standpoint doesn't look as favorable as whoever you'd be taking first overall in a regular redraft league, though. The projected output for the first overall pick shrinks. So naturally, the more players that are being kept, the more reason to keep an elite player with an early round pick. Even still, the concept of looking at a player's projection versus his alternatives projections, that can be helpful. Let's go back to the Todd Gurley versus Chris Hogan example. According to NumberFire projections, Gurley is expected to score 319 PPR points this season. And by the way, you can get all of NumberFire's projections for free on NumberFire.com. You can utilize them when making these decisions. But Gurley is expected to score 319 points this season. Chris Hogan is expected to score 181. Now look at your league's landscape and see a player or a group of players you may be able to select at the end of the first and in the 15th round, which is where you'd hypothetically be getting Todd Gurley and Chris Hogan. If the difference in Gurley's projections outweighs the difference in Hogan's, then you may want to consider keeping Todd Gurley even though his cost is significantly higher. But do you see why it's insanely difficult to answer keeper questions given this scenario? It's impossible to be accurate in doing so without knowing who these alternatives are. Before I move on here, yes, this is a very VORPy way of doing things. I'm looking at value over replacement player here, and I think value over replacement player has a lot of flaws. And I still wholeheartedly believe that, for reasons that I outline on episode 22 of this podcast. When we're comparing a player's point projection, we're not really accepting variance. Our projections are going to be wrong, and there's a wide range of outcomes for each guy. We're also not considering how the game is played weekly. One of the reasons that VORP can be harmful at the quarterback position specifically is that you can make assumptions that one team is starting the same quarterback each week. But we know that's a foolish thing to assume when you can effectively stream the position. And that brings me to the third question to ask when selecting a keeper, and that's, is your keeper playing a replaceable position? I like learning through examples, so let's run through another example. You've got two potential keepers, Kenny Golladay or Patrick Mahomes. Both of them can be kept in the 15th round. Since they have identical costs, you may just look at average draft position, see that Pat Mahomes has a higher ADP, and then keep Mahomes over Golladay. If Mahomes is going in the 11th round of drafts and Babytron is going in the 13th, why would you not keep Mahomes? Well, first off, quarterback prices are generally inflated. But more importantly, Mahomes exceeding expectation at a position that's easily replaceable in fantasy football is far less meaningful than Golladay far exceeding his. If Mahomes finishes as the QB9 instead of the QB17, does it really matter when you can match that type of production on the waiver wire? And before you say that you can't, you can. My other podcast, Living the Stream, exceeds that QB9 mark easily each year through streaming recommendations. Essentially, what I'm saying with this final question is that the way you view your alternatives should extend further than the draft. You need to also consider positional scarcity. So those are the three questions to ask. Who would you be drafting instead of the keeper? What type of cost savings are you generating? And is your keeper playing a replaceable position? Hopefully this at least got your brain moving in the right direction. Like I said, it's very difficult to provide concrete answers because there are so many different keeper settings and scenarios. Like, take this specific question as an example. Back in May, I got a listener email from Joey where he talked about how it was difficult to weigh the value of an early round keeper versus a late round one, similar to what we just talked about. In the email, he said his personal dilemma is whether to keep Dalvin Cook in the third or Carson Wentz in the ninth. I would bet that at least 10 to 12 guys are being kept in this specific league. So Dalvin Cook in the third round is going to provide pretty significant savings given his projection this year and who your alternatives would probably be versus what you're getting with Carson Wentz. And Carson Wentz plays a replaceable position too, so he's even less valuable. But then there's another listener email that reads, We play in a 12-team standard league where we start one quarterback, three wide receivers, two running backs, one tight end, and one flex with six bench spots. Usually, my keepers are easy to select since I don't typically have more than 3 to 4 sure shot guys at the end of the season. This year, however, my choices include Le'Veon Bell for a first rounder, David Johnson for a seventh, Kareem Hunt for a third, Adam Thielen for an eighth, Chris Hogan for a 10th, Josh Gordon for a 14th, and Carson Wentz for a 16th. I had been leaning towards Le'Veon, DJ, and Hunt since running backs are so highly valued in a standard league. Now I'm thinking that if I ditched Hunt for someone like Thielen, Josh Gordon, or Hogan, I could still grab 2 to 3 reliable running backs in the early to middle rounds. I would really appreciate to hear your thoughts and any insights on who you would choose as the third keeper from that list. Okay, so let's go through the process of how I'd select this keeper. I'd first look at the keeper landscape in the league. Since each team in this 12-team league can keep 3 players, that means we'll see 36 players being kept unless someone decides not to. And remember, the more players being kept, the worse your alternatives are going to be. If you want, you could rank the players that you're potentially keeping in the order that you'd want them in fantasy football this year. So let's say that you've got Le'Veon Bell first, then David Johnson, then Kareem Hunt, then Adam Thielen, then Gordon, then Hogan, and then Wentz. Let's rank things that way. Without any cost association, that means that you'd want to keep Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, and Kareem Hunt. With cost association, it's very obvious that you'd want to at least keep David Johnson because he's ranked 2nd on your list and you'd be keeping him for a 7th rounder. You don't really need to do a lot of work in order to know that you should be keeping David Johnson in this instance. That leaves you with 2 more keeper slots. You know that we probably don't want to keep Carson Wentz because of the replaceability aspect that I talked through earlier, so that crosses him off the list. And since we rank Josh Gordon ahead of Chris Hogan, we can cross Hogan off the list too because Gordon has a cheaper cost and he's ranked higher. That leaves us with Le'Veon Bell for a 1st, Kareem Hunt for a 3rd, Adam Thielen for an 8th, and Josh Gordon for a 14th. Now you just do the exercise that I outlined earlier. Find the point projections for each of these players and try to predict which types of players will be available at each keeper slot. And you know, that prediction piece may seem difficult, but really, it's not that hard. All you have to do is take an average draft position list and start crossing off names of keepers. And as you do that, the cost of players in the available player pool will rise and, in turn, change who those alternatives are at particular spots. Without knowing this piece of information, I can't fully answer this question. Like, if I were to say don't keep Le'Veon Bell for a first round pick, but the best first round pick that you can get is Royce Freeman, then that's not very smart. If you cannot keep Le'Veon Bell and then draft Le'Veon Bell with the first round pick, then yeah, of course, don't keep Le'Veon Bell. So to me, the only lock here, just based on the context that I have, is David Johnson. And then the final 2 spots come down to those 4 remaining players. And guys, I'm not doing this podcast to say stop sending me your keeper questions because they're impossible to answer without a ton of information. I'm just trying to push you in the right direction so that you don't have the urge to ask these questions in the first place. Because there's really nothing better than having a process and going through that process and making a final decision based on the process. That's it for today's show, though. I hope it at least helped you think about keepers a little bit differently. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And when you're on iTunes, do me a solid and leave me a rating and review. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Hit me up on there or email me at jj@numberfire.com if you have any questions at all for this week's mailbag show. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you later in the week.